Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash?
Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket.
Visit progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah, that feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
It started with radical opacity, a website born where people could gather and post anonymously, free from consequence or identity. Elsewhere, another website's radical transparency hosted damning documents meant to dismantle authoritarian regimes. But what happens when those two forces converge and anonymity and exposure become weapons aimed at the same target? This week's episode is 4chan, WikiLeaks, and Pizzagate, Part 1.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you.
Wade in to the sea with us.
4chan, WikiLeaks, and Pizzagate. Oh my.
Yeah, Nightmare Blunt Rotation.
FMK.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's a tough one.
We could do one now and then at the end another one, but this is a rough series of information to know about these places.
It's fascinating. I was talking to Tommy earlier because this part of the internet kind of eluded me. I was not involved in knowing about like 4chan or any of that stuff. I just wasn't on the internet then. Mm-hmm. But he was and you were. So mm-hmm. Y'all know a bunch of fucked up stuff. Yeah. I mean, I've heard about it since, but I was not there live for some of just the most repulsive things people have ever posted on the internet.
Oh, absolutely. I remember these days, and I remember early days of the internet that I knew that there were pockets of white supremacist websites or, you know, death photos or murder photos. And really, in 2003, we'll talk about when 4chan came about, I was in high school, and I do remember those early days, and I was straight up scared of it because I was like, anybody could be on there. Like, it's anonymous, so you don't know who the other person you're messaging. And as we heard from the prior Epstein episodes, you know, maybe they're an employee in a Bureau of Prisons facility, as we hear today, maybe they have some other connection to something else that we can't even fathom. So there's
maybe
something.
Maybe there's a pervert.
Yeah. And it was
right
this
in
was
the
even,
middle everyday pervert.
Oh, truly. And like before this, it wasn't even like, oh, Facebook, where you're totally like, this is your first and last name and high school and where mm-hmm. you live, like doxable information. This was just when it was like Howie from the Backstreet Boys, Howie's Princess 43 or whatever is like your name, but you would still have like a user history. And so 4chan coming out, I remember just being like, this could be any, this is lawlessness. Yeah. And it is.
I don't think I ever got on it. Like 2003, yeah. I graduated college in 2002. I don't know. I just have no memory of it unless I've completely blocked it out. But yeah, I don't think that stuff that at the time I would have been searching out. I don't like a lot of gore and mm-hmm. things like that. You know, what a profession for me to 20 years later get involved in.
You're like, I don't want to look at horrible
like
things on the internet.
Gore and like horrible stuff and see Sam. So I'm just not going to look at any of this.
I got a website for you.
But yeah, it's fascinating how this all ties in to larger things we've been discussing, specifically Epstein, and how when you really start to look at it, it's a small web.
It is.
The core is a small web that just there's many branches out from it.
No, truly. And I think, you know, because we've had listeners be like, oh, we don't want any more Epstein episodes, or it's so much, I can't handle it. I hear you. The problem is every possible topic we could discuss, there is some, it's like we said, it's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but mm-hmm. horrible, but the reverse horrible. So it just will come up. But I've been fascinated by the idea of WikiLeaks and 4chan. And I really did not know a lot about all the stuff that we're going to talk about in these next few episodes. It's like I would see him in headlines and I never mm-hmm. bothered to dive down into, oh, this was just orchestrated. Like you could just see, and then people go later on, give interviews in which they say, yeah, I orchestrated that. You're like, wait, hang on a minute. Now we'll show you the strings of the puppeteers, I guess, today.
Yeah, it is wild to think that you could be completely anonymous online, because I don't think anyone has that luxury anymore.
No, not anymore. I mean, absent measures upon measures upon measures, yeah. But not quite as easily as 4chan, because even now I think they're a little bit more trackable. Sometimes I think it depends, you know, if you use an anonymous computer in a place where there's no cameras, you know, then who knows, but yeah. They can at least track the IP of it. They might not mm-hmm. know it's you mm-hmm. specifically. So damn, it's crazy.
Well, we'll probably be talking about all these topics and more.
Oh, so many
at
things.
Crime Wave at Sea 2027.
Yeah, we said coming to the ocean with us. We meant an ocean of horrificness for this topic, but we mm-hmm. have a real good ocean that's like an actual one you could also swim in with us February 8th through 12th, 2027. If you go to crimewaveatsea.com and use code SINISTER, we can hang out on the sea.
It'll be so much fun. A welcome break from this nightmare.
Gestures
and so
wildly.
Many fun friends are going with us. A lot of creators from last time, plus new creators. We're on a bigger ship. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a blast.
Cannot wait. Go to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister and join us there. And also join us tomorrow from the comfort of your own home or wherever you are. We're having our March live Q&A. We had to reschedule a little bit. So it's tomorrow, April 2nd at 8:30 p.m. Central. So ask us any questions to talk about this episode, the Epstein episodes. We always get our FMK questions. Those are always fun, as well as like current events. I'm sure we'll talk about all kinds of stuff that's going on. So yeah.
Guess what I'm going to have prepared. I'm going to have my, because every month,
mm-hmm. Oh yes,
I believe
yes.
it's Laurel yes. asks us, what is something that you're proud of that you yes. haven't been able to talk about? And yes. I'm going to have a good answer this time. I don't have it presently, but I will come up with one.
Are you not going to ask about how your genius daughter asked about the root word of avocado while the class was going through Greek and Latin words?
I need to just read this text because
sometimes you get a text from your kid's teacher.
A teacher there texted me just a minute ago. We've been talking about Greek and Latin roots a lot in a small group that Ella is in. Today she asked what the root of the word avocado was, so I looked it up. I told her that it was Aztec, and we were just doing Greek and Latin. I bet she'll forget by the time she sees you, but I wanted you to know so you were prepared in case she asked you what the root was, because it does come from the Aztec word for testicle. And I said, thanks for letting me know. Seems like we all learned something new today.
We all did. So when she came home, did she forget?
I have yet to see her.
Okay,
she will not forget. And 100% we will be talking about testicles at the dinner table.
But now all of y'all listening, when your kids are like, what is the root word of avocado? You're prepared. You're totally prepared. And you know.
I didn't know.
I didn't know. No.
Who knew?
Shout out to that teacher for teaching us all some. For me, you, and some of our listeners today. Teaching us about avocados.
I was going to say we can all start calling it testimoli.
Testimoli.
So that's fun.
Honey, the avocados have gone bad. Make some testimony for us. Incredible. Incredible. I feel like this type of joke would be the kind that they would throw around on 4chan, because it seems like a testicle joke kind of a place, among other things.
There should be some sort of a meme. I'll try to make some kind of picture with mm-hmm. an avocado with testicles, or a grown man with
avocados?
The seed of the avocado nut as his nuts.
He's like, what is this?
It'll just say, suck on D's nuts, and it'll have somebody trying to get that last avocado off the nut, because that is, when I cut into an avocado, I want the whole avocado, including the remnants left on the nut. So you I will suck that nut to get it off. Avocados are too expensive. You just be leaving it behind.
They're costly. Very costly. You can't. I didn't realize until I Googled it one day, and you can't let the dogs get a hold of those nuts.
Oh, no.
It's poisonous.
Avocados are poisonous to dogs.
Nuts. Don't put those in your mouth. Lesson learned. If you do, just don't bite down.
It's
good advice. My goodness, what a day.
Well, probably advice you would have received on 4chan. Or maybe not. Maybe it would have been do bite down. Seems like you could get either way there.
Bite it.
Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. In October 2003, a 15-year-old from Westchester County, New York, named Christopher Poole, launched a website called 4chan from his parents' house, funding its early server costs on his mom's credit card. Modeled on the Japanese image board Futaba channel, known as 2chan, 4chan was initially a place to discuss anime. Within a few years, it became a cultural touchstone for providing something increasingly rare online, anonymity.
As we go through this, bear in mind, this all derived from a 15-year-old kid and his mom's credit card.
Yeah. So, dare to dream.
Yeah. Believe in yourself. Like this 15-year-old white kid did.
You can change the world from your parents' basement with your mom's credit card if you try hard enough.
Boom.
4chan's architecture was built around a single radical premise. No identity. Users were not required to register, were not assigned usernames, and accumulated no posting history. Posts auto-deleted as new content pushed them out. As Poole himself put it in a 2009 talk, 4chan had
no memory.
Poole argued publicly for his design philosophy. At a TED conference in 2010, he argued that anonymity enabled a kind of creative and social freedom impossible on identity-anchored platforms like Facebook. Poole intended to build a space where anything said could be said without consequence, attribution, or record. He could not have predicted the outcome.
And I do think this is interesting psychologically, what it means when we think we're being watched, when we think we aren't. It makes me think of Clerks, where he says, just leave the money out. And it says, like, please be make change. Be honest. He's like, it's honesty through paranoia. They see a plate of money out. They assume a camera's watching them. And it's this idea that now with, like, TikTok, today I watched a server from Florida talk about how he was badly treated by this table. And the woman from the table outed herself in the comments and was like, you know, my cheese, you did put cheese on my pasta or whatever it was. Well, then people descended. It turned out like all of this stuff where it could have been like she could have been anonymous. And then instead she chose not to be anonymous.
Well, that's but on her.
But people in the comments said, I think that servers should be allowed to wear Meta glasses or body cams or something, because they're like at the end of the day, they were all lying to get free food. Spoiler alert. But and the server was like, I have literal video footage like of the time that you were. They said we were there for an hour and a half. He goes, you were there 45 minutes. Like, we can see. So we're in this new age where he was offering something that didn't exist to try to encourage this behavior. And now we're almost like, as a society, turning that and going like, we'll find you. They'll tag users, Tizzy Ent or Dinesh or whatever. Yeah. Find this guy. He flipped me off in a parking lot and people will find him. So I don't know. It's weird. Yeah. Flip side.
Even people that overhear conversations from strangers at a restaurant will be like, hey, if your name's Kayla and you live in Baltimore, just know that your boyfriend's cheating on you with your best friend and they're going to New York this weekend. And they told you that they both have to go to weddings, but really they're sleeping together. And then it'll be like, everyone find Kayla. And they do. Luckily she finds out. But that was not, you know, the internet did not, and still will often turn on you. But now it's like people make it their mission to like find some sort of justice. And, you know, they're like, if I don't do anything today, I'm going to find that son of a bitch that's cheating on Kayla and out him, because I, you know, one less shitty man to worry about. Plus, you feel like you did something behind your keyboard.
No, it's true. And you're right. I think like people have that. Maybe we all feel a little bit like we don't have a lot of control in the world. And you're like, this is one good thing I can do. Like, I can make sure Kayla knows that this guy's a piece of shit. I can't stop the war. I can't save the children. I can't do this. But the one, this is justice. And I did a little bit of it. And I there's something to that. So I think before 4chan, there really was not a place for people to feel like they could go and say, and this is, you know, pre really like Reddit is still connected to Karma. It's still connected to your username and say Karma like points. So there's mm-hmm. still some connection to it versus 4chan really is like, you can be anybody or say anything. And it, we were about to see that allows for a lot,
which is wild that, and maybe it's his age, that you would think, oh, yeah, no one having to say who they are and you can just post anything. What could go wrong? That sounds amazing. What could go wrong?
Yeah, kiddo, a lot.
Anything and everything. What do you mean what could go wrong?
Yeah, I mean, my current 39-year-old lawyer brain is like, oh. I mean, like everything. So some kid came to me and was like, hey, I want your advice. Should I do this? I'm like, no, you're going to encourage, insert all the things that later actually happened here. But maybe that's what... You, not in a rude way, but he's a bit of a useful idiot, right? He's like, yeah. I'll create this platform and folks that will benefit from it. We're like, yes, yes, do create
yes,
that platform.
Please, we'll
we have to
it.
Protect. We have to protect this platform too. And you're like, why? Mm-hmm. I think we see why. Sinisterhood will be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash?
Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket.
Visit progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
When people are offered anonymity and no consequences to their reputations, their behavior skews increasingly more outrageous. On 4chan's most active board, B, the random board, the culture started to organize around transgression for its own sake. Users called it lulls, meaning the particular satisfaction of causing chaos or distress, detached from any moral repercussions. Behaviors discouraged in other online spaces like trolling, harassment, and coordinated disruption were celebrated on 4chan as evidence of wit and bravery.
And L-U-L-S, if you're following along.
I do know lulls. I do know the lulls
and
reference.
That leet speak kind of, you know, came about on there. Like, elite being L-E-E-T, which is short for elite, which is like, I'm better at computer than you. You know, and they would have these dick swinging contests kind of like, who I got this, you know, this is my school principal's home address and I sent 400 letters, you know, whatever. Like, figuring out ways to troll and embarrass and fuck with people that they thought deserved it.
Yeah. The anonymity itself birthed this culture and allowed it to flourish. Memes became a default communication style. Memes are repeatable jokes that often hinge on a reaction image or a recurring reference. As a kind of shared inside joke, memes also provided perpetual deniability. Otherwise offensive posts were disguised as mere memes or jokes being done for the lulls. In addition to memes, much of what shaped web culture in the 2000s originated in 4chan's anonymous boards, like internet pranks and hacktivist operations. MIT Technology Review called Poole's vision of the internet
radical opacity,
a space where people could act without being haunted by everything they had ever said or done. In doing so, he also created one of the most influential cultural engines of the early internet.
I think it's something about the anonymous, too. If someone goes, hey, like, let's all go and fuck with, you know, the PayPal website. They're like, OK, what do we do? And you just tell them what to do. And it's you've now accidentally created a hacktivist collective that like you just were all like kind of fucking around together.
And it's like would y'all all get together at a park and do this and like go down to the, no, it's because you have the safety of your bedroom mm-hmm. or, you know, behind your keyboard. Nobody knows. So at the end of the day, like even the people within the groups don't really know who they're talking to. Like you might be anonymous and be like, I'm an anonymous 15-year-old. These must also be anonymous 15-year-olds. No, that doesn't necessarily mean that's true.
Mm-mm, no, and you really don't know who's on the other side of it, but it does give this shield. And I think also if some of the folks were, you know, normally lone actors, or we do use that, the cliche of like guy in his parents' basement, but truly if you have, we see this with, you know, BTK or Ted Bundy or whatever, somebody that wants to have authority, they want to have some sort of control and they don't. And so they find another, you know, less legitimate way to do it. And probably there's some sort of thrill to, you know, you're doing your shift at CVS or whatever. And you're like, people don't know I'm the one that took down MasterCard last yeah. night. And that, I mean, that's what 4chan offered. So I can see how it'd be kind of addictive. And it doesn't yeah. have to be that big, like MasterCard. It could be some girl that pissed you off, you know, whatever.
Often that, yeah. Mm-hmm. More kind of like a fight club, but yeah. with keyboards.
Yeah. Keyboard fight club.
Keyboard fight club. Man, new improv troupe name for anybody that wants it. There you go. In 2006, on the other side of the world, an Australian hacker and activist named Julian Assange launched the website WikiLeaks with the stated mission of radical transparency. He believed in using the internet to expose the hidden workings of governments and corporations. While transparency was a part of his mission, Assange's writings from around that time provide insight into his motivation, sabotage. One analyst described Assange as
throwing grit in the machine
of what he saw as secrecy-based authoritarian governments, including the United States.
Yeah, Julian Assange said that Daniel Ellsberg was his inspiration for WikiLeaks. And Daniel Ellsberg is the one who in 1971 leaked 7,000 pages of classified Vietnam War documents to the New York Times and the Washington Post. He, you know, got in trouble. There was a Supreme Court case and there was a 6-3 ruling, I think, in his favor that it's a landmark freedom of the press case, no prior restraint. You know, you can't say, well, we think these are government documents, therefore it must be. So it sort of establishes this idea that leaking government secrets is it's a civic act, right? You're helping because the Vietnam War was, you know, they were lying, right? So that yeah. he thought, hey, I've got evidence that they're lying. I'm going to show them. So, you know, Julian Assange is Australian, had done some hacking before this, breaking into certain systems. He was young when he was initially, I think in 1995 was when he was initially busted for hacking and was just kind of avoided prison. You know, well, I'm just a young guy, you know, let me out on good behavior. And I think he helped police track down child predators. So showing like you can use your hacking for good. Like you can, sure. releasing things can be good. And also I can hack really well. I got in trouble for it. Maybe I should help the police hack these websites of sex predators. So I think he had this idea of like, okay, let's create this place where instead of Daniel Ellsberg had to go to the New York Times and Washington Post, you can just upload it here. And that way any journalist can get it. So we don't have to worry that the New York Times is actually owned by somebody that's mm-hmm. in that story or Washington Post or whatever. And this was 2006, right? It's before Jeff Bezos owns WAPO. So he was ahead of his time, Julian Assange, yeah. in yeah. this way.
WikiLeaks described itself as a stateless publisher. It incorporated under Swedish law, which provided some of the strongest press source protections in the world. This meant it would be nearly impossible for governments to take the site to court and force it to reveal a leaker's identity. The site's technical infrastructure was distributed across multiple jurisdictions. They protected against attack via redundancy, using mirrored servers and encrypted submission systems. WikiLeaks also routed through Tor, a free open source browser and network designed for online anonymity and privacy, to strip any identifying information from incoming documents before they reached staff.
This is about all you can do as far as precautions. They were thinking it through.
And that's a lot.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot, thinking it through. It's a hacker set it up, clearly, because it would be like, how would I hack it?
Yeah, no, for sure, which is why the law enforcement asks hackers to help them. They don't know how to do this stuff. They're like, we know you hacked something you shouldn't have, but can you help us hack into this child predator ring?
They're like, find me that guy that fucked us over because we need him on our team. And I think that's how the government, the U.S. government and other governments, I think they recruit people.
Absolutely. For sure. If you need, if someone is doing like what you want to be doing to your enemy, but you don't know how, why wouldn't you pay someone a gazillion dollars to come work for you and do it? Or say, we won't bring you up on those other charges if you help us with this.
Right? It's a little bit like, well, we could send you to jail for 500 years, or you could help us do it. And you're like, I will take the deal, please.
Yes, yes. Some early releases on WikiLeaks included Guantanamo Bay operating manuals, Scientology documents, and Kenyan human rights reports. These leaks attracted the attention of like-minded individuals who believed institutional secrets were a means to control the masses.
And this became not a huge headline, but it was kind of like, hey, there's this new website and these certain – none of these were bombshell documents, the first ones that got uploaded. It was sort of like
– which everybody, is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, they're like Guantanamo Bay. Yeah. It's extremely – it should be bombshell.
All this Scientology – what you're like, what? What is Scientology? And you're like, yeah. It's a whole thing. Big thing.
That's a big thing. And they probably fucking killed the leader's wife. She's missing.
For sure.
But no, it was crazy. Just like, I think that perhaps the federal or all the governments didn't know what was possible. Like they did. They're like, well, people are uploading stuff, but they're not going to upload like anything crazy. Cut to Chelsea.
In 2010, Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning transmitted over 700,000 classified military and diplomatic documents to WikiLeaks. The releases included the collateral murder video, a phrase used to describe footage of a 2007 U.S. helicopter attack in Iraq that killed over a dozen people, including two Reuters journalists. She also released the Afghan and Iraq war logs and a massive cache of State Department cables.
Yeah, the collateral murder video was big because, first of all, you can still watch it on WikiLeaks. And it is, if anybody's ever like, oh, you know, it's war, but it's not really. Watch somebody run for their life while a helicopter shoots them down.
Yeah.
Watch them cower and run for their life. And were some of those people terrorists? Well, I don't know. That's what Chelsea Manning was asking. Two of them definitely weren't. They were definitely journalists that a helicopter just blasted them. So when she saw those things, she talked about like she was a hacker. Like she was like very good at computer stuff. And that's how she ended up as a her story is it's called readme.txt is her memoir. And it's fantastic. But she talks about like when she first came across this data and information, she was just like, oh, huh. This is opposite of what we've been telling the news and just kind of that idea of like, oh, I'm helping. Mm-hmm. And so she saw that video and then the Afghan and Iraq war logs and the State Department cables were huge. It was huge.
And it's such a thing to grapple with because one, you're realizing the institution you work for is full of lies and the work you've been doing is, you know, contributing to that. Do I release it because this is the right thing to do? And like, put myself in jeopardy, my not just like harm's way, but like losing your job and everything? Or do you like
your freedom,
keep working for this, the bad guys? And just, you know, this is why I have like a lot of respect for whistleblowers because it is such a weird position to be in that not many people find themselves in. And when you do the right thing and you do say, this is what's really going on. I do think it's the public's right to know. And kudos to all of you that put yourself in that position because oftentimes they're on their way to a meeting with their attorney and quote unquote kill themselves in their car.
Mm-hmm. Or their car blows up or they fall out of a window or something like that. No, I think Chelsea Manning, without a doubt, is a hero because she saw these documents that had classified stamped at the top. And she said, it, you know, detailed what we did. She said she was having to write some of them, you know, as part of her job, you know, going through the data and drafting these, the log, war logs and everything of like, we killed this many people, you know, this happened. And then she said she put classified like she's supposed to, send it to her boss. Her boss read it, came to her and said, okay, it looked great. I'm actually going to remove the classified and go ahead and send it to the journalists. And Chelsea's like, well, but it just said classified and you took classified off. And her boss said, classified's for us. We decide what's classified. And if we decide it's not, then we just release it. She's like, oh, so you're saying it's arbitrary? And the manager said, yeah, yeah, it's classification is just an arbitrary thing. We decide. And she went, huh, well, I Jill, if we're going by judgment, I don't think this should be classified. And that's really where she really got this idea of like, it's arbitrary. They are hiding it. I know this isn't going to harm any military operations. You know, it's stuff that had happened, you know, weeks or months before. So she was, and she really tried to go to Washington Post. She tried to make calls to like CNN. Nobody was calling her back. No one was listening to her. And this was literally what Julian Assange set it up for, was that you've got a Daniel Ellsberg who's got the Pentagon papers and is looking for a place to offload them. And nobody would listen to her. And she had to go back to, she was about to go get redeployed. And she said, I had this much time and this, you know, a little bit of time and a little bit of internet. And I was just like, upload, 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 upload. And she just watched them all tick up and it was uploaded, threw the CD away and just went on back to work. It's like, damn, dude, it's crazy. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash?
Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket.
Visit progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
The war logs were raw battlefield reports that offered ground-level accounts of day-to-day military operations in Afghanistan and Iraq. They showed there had been unreported civilian casualties, friendly fire incidents, and that official body counts were being manipulated. The State Department cables were private diplomatic communications between U.S. embassies and Washington. They included candid, often embarrassing assessments of foreign leaders, backroom dealings, and the gap between what American diplomats said publicly and what they actually thought. Due to the enormous, unprecedented scale of the drop, WikiLeaks became a global flashpoint overnight.
Yeah, it kind of became this, well, there shouldn't be a website like this. This should be illegal. You shouldn't be able to just upload classified information somewhere. And it's like, says who? You're not in charge of the whole internet.
Yeah. And also, we've already established classification is arbitrary. So
it's made up.
Okay, you work there. Maybe that gives you some right, but like you're also probably dealing in dirty deeds. So we need to know what's really going on.
I mean, really, and war is violent. That's obviously, mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that you need to hide civilian death tolls, to torture prisoners of war, to show support. We're saying, oh, there's no government support of these insurgents. And there is, though. Like, it's just,
yeah.
So I feel like she was, Chelsea Manning was truly motivated by a feeling that the public had a right to know. And I mean, she didn't make money off of it. And in fact, things didn't go great for her, spoiler alert, after this. So I think we, like you said, when whistleblowers do come forward, it is important for the public loudly to say, no, we actually support the whistleblower, mm-hmm. because they're just like us. Because that could be your cousin or your uncle or your nephew or your sister who just happens to work somewhere and go, fuck, I seen something I wasn't supposed to.
And not to dismiss them, like, that is way too crazy to be true. Like all the mm-hmm. UAP whistleblowers, mm-hmm. you're like, what is more crazy? That the government is keeping a bunch of information secret from us, or that these three educated professional people that got hired to this three-letter agency saw something that's fucked up and was like, I got to do the right thing. Which one of those scenarios is more likely, you know?
Right. Or the Boeing whistleblower that we talked about too, mm-hmm. who was just repeatedly tried internally to say, well, aren't we going to fix these parts? And when he was told, we are not going to fix these parts. And in fact, we're going to let dangerous things go out into the world. His conscience told him, I can't let that happen. A door's going to fly off a plane. And he was right. So I feel like folks.
And then
like,
he ended up dead in his car.
Allegedly.
What they call a self-inflicted gunshot wound, what I would call murder.
100%. I think somebody took that guy out. I mean, mm-hmm. that's my gut. I have no evidence, you know, but given that the situation he was in, that he was real ready to go testify the next day, it seems certainly strange.
In December 2010, PayPal, Visa, MasterCard, Amazon, Bank of America, and EveryDNS all cut off WikiLeaks within days of each other. Each company cited terms of service violations, though the coordination led many observers to allege government pressure. The financial blockade was a significant turning point in WikiLeaks' trajectory, forcing it to rely on cryptocurrency donations, a novel workaround at the time. It also radicalized a lot of WikiLeaks supporters and is directly what triggered Anonymous's Operation Payback. The hacktivist collective had grown directly out of 4chan's board culture. Anonymous responded to WikiLeaks being financially blockaded by coordinating DDoS attacks against PayPal, Visa, and MasterCard. This was an early demonstration that the mob emerging from Poole's platform could be organized into a politically motivated force.
Yeah, it really was a hornet's nest kind of a kick when it seemed as if at first all these companies were like, listen, it's a website. It uses us. What are we going to do? Like, we can't help it. And then some meetings all occurred. And then all of a sudden, all of those companies were like, oh, WikiLeaks has violated our terms of service. Mm-hmm. We've got to cut them off. Not to mention during this time, Chelsea Manning had been arrested. Julian Assange had been arrested. So the Anons is what they call themselves. The Anonymous members are like, they're coming after us. Like, we created this Anonymous framework to do what was right. And not only are they arresting the people that are using our framework, now they're trying to turn PayPal on us. That's why I think early days they were excited about crypto, because it was something mm-hmm. that the government can't just shut off like a faucet. But it really kicked the hornet's nest and created this, like, we're going to shut your Visa website down. And I like remember when this happened, that it made such the news, because it was like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, like teens from the internet have shut down PayPal. And it's like, I don't think it's just teens.
No, no, no. And also, even if it is, if all you're doing online all day is trying to hack stuff and teaching yourself to do that and you're just good at it, then yeah, you don't. I mean, you know, anybody can hack into something if you're mm-hmm. trained how to do it, regardless of your age or you're just really good at that kind of shit. I find it fascinating and another really good example of like, cryptocurrency is already a thing, obviously, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. is like discussed in these forums and stuff, but wasn't really like publicly being discussed like it is now. So it's just another example of like, once we as just regular people find out about stuff, the government and the elites have known for decades.
And folks that are operating in darkness, you know, the dark web or whatever. And I think that's primarily where it first came about, is you're buying and selling people and things that you can't use PayPal or Visa or MasterCard for. But people could donate to support WikiLeaks with those, you know, so they were taking also crypto and regular money. But you're right. It was like, well, their money got cut off. And it's like, well, if you're underground, you kind of know how to get money mm-hmm. regardless on the internet. But
everyone else is like, my ATM card won't
mm-hmm.
work.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Julian Assange is like, that's fine, I have a Bitcoin wallet. So you're right. I think there is a subset of people, both that, and it's like a Venn diagram. Some of them are elite, some of them are criminals, some of them are both, but that know about things, that are early adopters of these things mm-hmm. way before, including the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Way, way before us.
The U.S. government arrested Manning, and she was held in conditions that drew international condemnation. Ultimately, she was sentenced to 35 years for violating the Espionage Act. Critics like the ACLU called her sentence unconstitutional and disproportionate. A Department of Defense task force later assessed with high confidence that the Iraq dataset caused no direct personal impact on U.S. leadership. and that the Afghanistan materials would not significantly affect military operations. Manning was still vilified by the official narrative, which alleged catastrophic damage the government's own internal assessment would later contradict. After serving 7 years of a 35-year sentence, Manning was released in May of 2017, when President Obama commuted her sentence in the final days of his presidency.
Which I feel like was the right thing to do, given their assessment said, yeah, it was fine. Like, yeah, it kicked up a lot of fuss as far as we looked bad, but it didn't lead to casualties. It didn't lead to loss of intelligence or positions or exposing CIA assets. I think she's extremely smart and was very thoughtful about what she chose to release.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, she stormed the Capitol and hit people in the face with assault rifles or broke through into, you know, senators' offices and threatened them and stuff like that.
Bringing
your like
zip
she
ties.
Did any of that shit.
Stealing a podium, walking out with the...
And then was given clemency and they're in let out because, you know, they're just doing what patriots do.
Oh, but it is no, it's true. That's the double standard. But it was always just kind of that question of, is WikiLeaks like a journalism organization and therefore protected by the First Amendment, but or is it a non-state hostile intelligence service, which is what the government tried to call it. But, you know, she got out at least.
By 2011, 4chan's new board, dedicated to current events, had devolved into what Poole himself described as a white supremacist forum. Poole likened it to Stormfront, the oldest and largest white supremacist forum on the internet. He deleted New in October that year and replaced it with a new board called Poll, or Politically Incorrect. The newly released Epstein files shed some light on this creation. In October of 2011, the same month Poll was created, Boris Nikolic, a former advisor to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, suggested that Jeffrey Epstein should meet with Christopher Poole. Nikolic cited a Washington Post article describing 4chan as
a hive mind capable of mass disruptions.
He told Epstein,
"This article describes why I find Moot interesting. The potential for manipulation is huge." So to clarify, Moot is a nickname for Christopher Poole. So this advisor to Bill and Melinda Gates is telling Epstein, you got to call Christopher Poole because he can help you manipulate people.
And he knows him so well that he knows his nickname is Moot.
Yeah, that's his nickname. I think it might be his, maybe what they call him too on 4chan.
His handle, yeah.
Yeah, but it's crazy that to think, again, like we said, this is how people are recruited, is you go, oh, look, they've created a thing I want to manipulate. Mm-hmm. Let's tap him on the shoulder and see if he'll play.
Yeah, let's see how much money, because money is meaningless to us. We have so much of it. Mm-hmm. How much money it'll take for them to come work for the dark side.
Yeah, it's like money, power, connection. Like you find out what somebody wants and you tell them, I can get that for you. Just trade this to me. And they do.
An email from Epstein indicated the meeting happened and the convicted sex offender wrote that he
liked Moot a lot.
Poole addressed the implied connection directly. Poole addressed the implied connection directly in February 2026, stating that Epstein
had nothing to do with the reintroduction of a politics board to 4chan, nor anything else related to the site.
Poole insisted that the decision to create Poll had been made weeks before any contact with Epstein occurred.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, okay.
I believe you. I believe you, Christopher Poole. I believe you.
Even if it did, like, that doesn't mean he can't come in a few weeks later and wreck shop. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean,
what are you talking about? There's emails that we've now seen. Why would Epstein lie in this, what he thinks is a confidential email with this dude being like, yeah, I liked him a lot. Not happening. Yeah.
Also, why are they even talking about you? And why did you take the meeting? And what the fuck are you talking about? It had nothing to do with nothing. That's crazy to me. That's just such a hilarious, dumb response. It's just so dumb to just be like, there is zero connection between this man who definitely wanted to use me to manipulate all of you guys and the thing that I did, which was exactly what he wanted me to do. And his best friend later said that that's exactly what they wanted and they manipulated you guys. None of that's related.
No.
Like, okay, we believe.
And
you,
I wonder if the fact that he's so used to things being anonymous and being able to deny plausibility that he kind of forgets to, like, hey, dumbass, this doesn't fall under the same category. We all know who you are now. Like, you're not just Moot behind a keyboard.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, you're moot behind a keyboard until you go and sit and have lunch with Jeffrey Epstein. Mm-hmm. And then you're Christopher Poole, the dumbass who sat and had lunch with Jeffrey Epstein. And we all know. We literally all know. And you did it days before you did a thing that he's like, boy, it'd be great if he did this thing. And then you immediately went and did it. And then you're like, I was going to do that anyway. I had planned it already before that. Okay. Maybe you did. Maybe you did.
You're also saying... admitting, rather, that something you created has turned into a white supremacist forum, which you seem to be okay with.
Well, he was pissed about it, Olivia.
Yeah, was. I mean, okay. And then he went and worked with a bunch of, you know, Nazis. So how pissed off could you really be about it?
I mean, I think he was pissed off that it was overt. Like, he was like, you guys.
Maybe that, yes.
Now, they're going to think that we're all just a Nazi website. I have to delete new, and we're going to create a thing called poll, and it's political. So just make it be about politics, and then it's not technically racist. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm like, bitch, I thought you weren't a moderator. I thought you created this place everybody can be loose and free. Now you're coming in moderating part of this, but not the other part of it. Like, that becomes the issue, right? If you're going to be Mr. Hands Off, and then you come in and start, well, Epstein told me to, ooh, and you start moving things around and go, what? No, it's just because I wanted to move it. I thought that you weren't a moderator.
You're doing the exact same thing that you didn't like and the reason you started this, but it's a very interesting social experiment that perhaps that really can't exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
At some point,
it's used as
you want control of the thing you've created.
Mm-hmm. They're like, this monster's turned on me and tried to kill me. And you're like, yes, Dr. Frankenstein, indeed it did.
It will. And it will every time.
That's some bad news. Sinisterhood will be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash?
Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket.
Visit progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Poole created the board as a place to contain the site's most extreme political content away from its other boards. Rather than contain, Poole grew and quickly became 4chan's most active board. Its content was organized around far-right ideology, including white nationalism, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and misogyny. The same old hateful rhetoric was now being delivered in the familiar, ironic, meme-filled way that felt familiar to the average 4chan user.
So really it went from, you know, literally saying the N-word or insert whatever stereotype
R-word,
here.
F-word.
But instead of saying out loud, oh, I think, you know, the economy is bad because of, you know, the N-words. Instead, they would make these silly memes where it's like, the face win, all your money is gone because N-words have taken it. And like drawing pictures and stuff. And again, it's in the same funny copy pasta is what they use for like just copy and pasting the same jokes over and over and like the same copy pasta format, but it's abhorrent racist stuff. And there's two kinds of people that consume that. And that's like the abhorrent racist and the ones that could be convinced to become and just the right joke. And that's the dangerous thing is because it was abhorrent racist for creating these things. And I think even some dumbass kids were just copying and pasting what they saw, but then it becomes this, that you are what you consume, right? And so you're consuming this stuff and you've now created the largest board that was like
snakes eating its tail.
God.
And to do that, to make it like funny, I mean, it's becomes palatable to people who would otherwise be offended. It, like you said, it's like, well, this is a funny picture, so I'm going to send it to my buddy, and because, you know, he'd think it was funny, and then he sends it to a buddy, and so on and so forth. It waters down the danger of what all of these things really are.
Truly. And I think we're seeing it now repeated with AI videos. That's, you know, the president of the United States publishes a video where Barack and Michelle Obama are depicted as gorillas in a cartoonish way. And it's like, they go, oh, well, it was just a cartoon of people. Why is everybody getting so mad about it? I'm like, you're copying and pasting the 4chan method, which was this, which was to trick us into accepting horrifically racist things because it's kind of for the LOLs. Like, no, we can see through that. If one, you can see through it if you're aware that this whole culture exists.
And you want to. Or you use it as a shield to be, you know, again.
I just thought it was funny.
I'm not racist. I just thought this picture was funny.
And you're like, God damn, well, we've got more to talk about than that, than just the sucked picture that you shared.
This delivery system meant that the most extreme offensive content could be produced and consumed under the sheen of deniability. Users would say outrageous things, and if they received pushback, would insist it was just a joke, known as shitposting, for the lulz. Researchers publishing in Harvard Kennedy School's Misinformation Review found that approximately 36% of news sources regularly shared by American users on poll qualified as junk news, including propaganda, sensationalism, or conspiracy material engineered to radicalize.
It's the same kind of with TikTok or Facebook or anything where you're just like, funny video, horrible racist meme, fake news, other fake news. But it's like fed to you in the same way that a legitimate picture of your neighbor is. Or, you know, in this case, like I was already looking at memes on 4chan and now this is fed to me. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's a lot of news sources that are fake.
Yeah, and then you go down a rabbit hole, and then you're so deep of, like, memes and lulz because you were like, I don't really get what this means. So you click on something to explain it, and then you're 50 clicks in to get back to where you started.
Mm-hmm. No, it really, it can suck you in for very easily.
Academic analysis of poll and related communities has documented how meme culture functions as ideological infrastructure. The content is repetitive, high volume, impossible to fully moderate, and specifically designed to move the Overton window by normalizing fringe positions through humor and familiarity. The Overton window is the range of ideas a society considers acceptable for mainstream political discussion. Users explicitly described the goal as red-pilling, the act of exposing newcomers to an extremist worldview through incrementally escalating content. The board became effective at manufacturing far-right politics at an alarming scale for an audience consuming it with plausible deniability. In August of 2014, a programmer named Aaron Joni published a lengthy blog post about his ex-girlfriend, indie game developer Zoe Quinn. The post falsely implied Quinn had traded sexual favors for a favorable review of her game. The post falsely implied Quinn had traded sexual favors for a favorable review of her game, Depression Quest. The accusation was false. Joni later admitted he had no evidence, but it didn't matter. Within days, coordinated harassment targeting Quinn erupted across 4chan, Reddit, and IRC channels. Quinn's home address was posted. Rape and death threats flooded her inbox. She fled her home. What followed became known as Gamergate. For decades, video games had been understood as a male space, specifically made for white, heterosexual, and adolescent players. The industry had marketed to that demographic, creating a sense of ownership. By 2014, that was changing. Feminist critics like Anita Sarkeesian were gaining mainstream attention for analyzing sexism in game design. Developers from outside the traditional demographic were making and publishing games. Gaming journalism was covering representation and diversity as legitimate cultural topics. To a significant subset of the existing gaming community, this expansion felt more like an invasion, like a hostile takeover of the one cultural space they felt was still theirs. A group of disaffected white males began punishing who they saw as taking over a sacred space.
And you really think about this, looking at old video game ads, and everything's always like a young boy, you know, probably sixth, seventh, eighth grader. And that's not to say anybody can't game. I'm just saying the sort of avatar of what mm-hmm. games were trying to sell to, from Nintendo, Sega Genesis, all that up.
All of
so,
them.
If you grew up with that, and also you're hanging out on 4chan where you think women and minorities are the problem, yeah. and then all of a sudden you're like, I knew that a woman game developer couldn't have good reviews of her game, probably because she sucked someone off. Look what her boyfriend wrote. It's like, well, but she didn't suck anyone off. And you, yeah. you just made that up.
You and just now made it her up. Life's ruined because you've doxed her and said horrible things. And the thing that she was trying to just enjoy, she was just mm-hmm. existing, trying to enjoy things she enjoyed, is mm-hmm. now ruined, and you've fucked her life up.
Truly. And I think we did not, and by we, I mean me as an average female internet user at the time, I didn't really appreciate how bad it was. And of course, you and I did not have a platform at the time and stuff like that. But like,
we didn't even know each other.
No, we didn't even meet at this before as Gamergate raged on. But
I do remember Tommy talking about it though.
And I remember, you know, not Paris, but the guy I was dating at the time was very into games. And I heard about it tangentially. And he, you know, he was a liberal guy, but I didn't even hear him kind of go, man, this is wrong. We've got to mm-hmm. do something about it. In fact, I don't think, you know, not putting anybody we know on blast, just kind of in general, it was like, wow, that's kind of weird that these guys on the internet can do that. And, you know, listening to Zoe's story and Sarkeesian, all of them who were targeted merely for, like you said, doing their jobs, making a game, living, that they didn't know what else to do other than, you know, flee from the internet, try, you know, change their houses, change their addresses and all that. And I don't know that we, the public, were aware of it in a, as serious as it was. Yeah. It was just like, oh, these women are kind of complaining. That I think now hearing these things, we would be like, we got to send the police after every one of those little shits that's putting their address on the internet.
For sure. But,
yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's just times have changed, I guess, in a good way.
For sure. I do remember, I mean, I don't remember specifics. I do remember Tommy agreeing that, like, yeah, this is a huge problem. Yeah. And we've seen Kimmy, he's played video games since he, you know, could talk, maybe before. And they are geared towards that. I mean, mm-hmm. the games produced, the people playing the games, the avatars you design in the games, like, all of it is for the male gaze. Mm-hmm. So then you have women coming on the scene, and what these dumb incels don't even realize, it's like, women have been here the whole time.
Yeah.
They were just using different names and stuff because they knew that this would happen. Mm-hmm. And then they decide, you know what? It's 2014. Maybe times have changed and I can ask for a review as myself. Nope. She couldn't. But
nope.
The fact that these assholes thought it was always there just shows how stupid they are, you know?
Yeah. And it is this feeling of equity. If you are in a supremacist position, equity to you seems like you're losing something.
Yeah.
You know, because they're like, but we're always the stars of the game. It's always a white man starring mm-hmm. the game. And now you people are coming in and changing it. Now it's just like a woman of Asian descent is the lead character in a game. And you're like, yeah, it's probably a fucking awesome game. Shut up and take 5 seconds and play it. But it's like that feeling of when you are in this position of privilege, any shift to towards equity, you just are like, oh my God, they took our games. And you're
they're like, taking our rights. They're taking our freedom.
They took my games. And you're like, they did not. No one took your games. They're making different, better games. You could also just not play those games.
Yeah. You could also just shut the fuck up. Yeah. And shove your opinion right on up your ass.
But I think, as we're about to learn, this is one of those where I think there probably were a good number of people that felt that way, but they weren't as many and plentiful as were created to feel that way.
Sure.
And they were tapped on the shoulder by this piece of shit we're about to introduce you all to, that I hope for all of you, you've never heard of him before, but you, unfortunately, many of you probably have. And you, with people like that, you're like, well, we had a couple of upset people, and now we've got a riot on our hands mm-hmm. because this guy came in with a megaphone and started screaming.
It was not a coincidence that Gamergate ignited on poll and spread through 4chan. When the harassment grew too intense, even for 4chan's moderators, it migrated to 8chan, which had been built specifically to host content that 4chan wouldn't. An early pattern emerged. Each time radicalized communities were deplatformed, they were driven to harder-edged alternatives. So we went from 2 to 4, we skipped 6, and now we're at 8.
They're just doubling each time. We're going to have 16 Chan. Yeah. You have 16 Chan. But we'll talk. We talked a bit about 8 Chan in our QAnon coverage, and we'll talk about it in the next episode as well. But it just goes to show you, you know, you kick Nick Fuentes off of YouTube, and he has, 50,000 viewers on Rumble every night. Yeah. So it's like, what's Rumble? A racist YouTube. Like, someone will just make a racist version of your website. What's Truth Social? Even more racist X. Like, how is that possible?
Because the people in charge with the money just, they're like, all right, then we'll just go set up shop somewhere else. And then I'll start another paper company and another paper company.
For real. I mean, they are unstoppable. And when you have unlimited resources, there really is. I mean, what are we going to do? Like,
what we have to do, and the shitty part is the majority of us don't have unlimited resources, but what we do have is heart. Yes. And we all need to band together to oust those that are just fucking soulless, bottomless, dark pits that happen to have billions of dollars.
And also, this doesn't happen in a vacuum where it's like, these are little individuals reading this going, I'm going to go out and do it too. So it's like sons and brothers and dads and cousins and uncles and like going, we don't do that in this family.
Mm-hmm. And calling it out when you see it. Like, not just being like, I don't want to stir the pot. It's Thanksgiving. I'm not going to say anything about, you know, what my uncle said playing Call of Duty. It's like, why not? Say it. Like, that's the only way things change.
Oh, it's true. And we see, too, it has, you got to nip it in the bud, because what starts is a pissed off guy goes to 4chan, then everybody on 4chan's talking about it, and then it gets off, you know, it goes even beyond 4chan to where there's a whole other fucking website that's even worse.
Yeah. Somehow it's even worse. It just keeps going and going.
Keeps spreading. Yeah. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash?
Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket.
Visit progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Then Gamergate spread beyond anonymous message boards. Right-wing journalist Milo Yiannopoulos was recruited by news website Breitbart and its executive chairman, Steve Bannon, specifically to cultivate the Gamergate demographic. Milo became the movement's most prominent mainstream amplifier. He framed the harassment as a series of principled consumer complaints about journalistic ethics rather than a white male revolt. Milo even embedded himself directly in Gamergate's coordination networks, becoming an insider. Through Breitbart, Milo introduced the movement's grievances to an audience far beyond gaming culture.
And he really tried to write them almost like they were cultural commentary essays of like, I'm just analyzing how it's much like the memes of like, I'm just asking questions. I'm just telling a joke. But what it really was crystallizing better than the posters on 4chan, crystallizing it into this way that's, by the way, he's getting paid specifically to manipulate you fucking dummies. So Steve Bannon, as we'll hear, discovers, like, this is what I'm fixing to do. And, hey, Milo, if I gave you enough money, would you write these articles? And he's like, yes, I would love to write whatever you want. And it also helps that Milo is a openly gay man. So he would be like, I love diversity. Mm-hmm. People, I do. And it's like, just because you're gay does not mean that you're one of us. Like, does not mean that you care about the cause. And in this case, money, I think, outweighed anything that he wanted to do, as well as perhaps power and mm-hmm. I think proximity to power. So when you get tapped by Steve Bannon, and this is way back in 2014, this is pre Steve Bannon is not even friends with Donald Trump then. He was just owning Breitbart, trying to manipulate people.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a fucking just sack of hot air the entire time too. Mm-hmm.
Just with boils all over.
I see that man and immediately have visceral reaction, much like the first time I saw He Who Shall Not Be Named in the Harry Potter's. Like, you know, you're like, just like, ooh.
A chill. You're yeah. like, oh, oh. Dangerous.
What is this?
Damn, my hackles are up. And you're like, I mean, I think as animals, we do have those systems. And you're like, not that one. Not, it's like, something that's a poisonous right. one. Yep. Nope. Poison one.
He's filled with darkness.
He is filled with Steve Bannon, filled with darkness.
Bannon had recognized the opportunity in gaming years before Gamergate ignited. His earlier experience running an online gold farming operation in World of Warcraft had introduced him to the organizing power of anonymous young men online. When Gamergate erupted, Bannon knew exactly what he was looking at. He told journalist Joshua Green in the 2017 book Devil's Bargain,
"These guys, these rootless white males, they had monster power. I realized Milo could connect with these kids right away. You can activate that army. They come in through Gamergate or whatever and then get turned on to politics and Trump."
In Bannon's design, Breitbart became the funnel, serving as a pipeline to convert gaming culture resentment into conservative political identity. Milo served as the bridge and Trump was the destination.
That's what Bannon wanted all along. And I mean,
first of all, your Bannon impression was great. And to, you got everyone go watch it on YouTube because you look like just like a drunk uncle at a wedding trying to make it through.
Just hanging on. I have to, when I do voices, I try to physically embody them. But yeah, no, it's crazy how, and again, you always respect the grift when it's well done. And this is a smart man. Steve Bannon is a piece of shit, certainly, but boy, you cannot argue that he is not savvy, smart to take advantage, to see, hey, this World of Warcraft has this something that I can make money on. Well, mm-hmm. I'm going to just invest in that then. And not to see it as like, it's a fun game for us all, but it's like, oh, I can squeeze some pennies out of these nerds. Yeah. And the same with this of, well, I really don't care what they look like, but if it's a lot of angry white people and I could men and I could whip them all up, what is this gamer thing? Yeah. Right about that. Who cares? But slip a lot of stuff in there about woke, right? About diversity, how they're trying to take our jobs and they're trying to, you know, it's like he's always thinking like 5 years ahead almost.
Yeah. I had no idea that the World of Warcraft thing even happened. And it makes sense that like, that's kind of what he was doing. What I hate about that, as someone who used to love World of Warcraft, I still do, I just haven't played in a long time, is that so many of the people that he was cultivating really were just there to have a good time and play this escapism game where they could be someone else, get away from their real lives for a while. A lot of them had to have been kids, teenagers, some adults, you know? But to take something that for so long, like, especially like RPG games and everything, is a way to cultivate community and inclusivity and to like feel like you have something. For this fucking asshole to like blow that all up and exploit it is so sad.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I think it sucks because truly video games offer people a lot. They offer them escape. They offer them a way to connect with others that they otherwise wouldn't. You know, people that live far away. I know somebody who their nephew lives, you know, a bunch of states away, and getting together and playing Minecraft together is like their time together. And my brother-in-law and my niece will play games together. And it's, you know, she loves to create and build. And I'm Ella not an anti-
Oh, yeah. Simon and the kids play together all
they
the
play,
time.
You know,
Simon
Luigi's
and the
mansion-
kids. Tommy and the kids.
Tommy and the kids. Simon and his... He's like, all right, kids. No, but I was like, you know, like it really, it does offer something. But much like the internet offers us a job, right? You and I, podcasts don't exist without the internet. Me, you listening, hello, thank you for listening. You couldn't hear us, right, without the internet until you get a ham radio and listen to our CB in case the system goes up. But all these things that we find joy in, and most of us are not nefarious monsters, are like, this is a nice, fun thing. But if you're the type of person that, like, the Steve Bannons of the world is like, how can I get in and steal the gold? And it just sucks that we do all, we're happy for me to, and you and everybody to just enjoy whatever you're enjoying. The problem is you can't enjoy it without also sort of looking over your shoulder and going, who is doing, like, yeah, is there anything about this that you guys are getting from me from this? Mm-hmm. It's the reason why I stopped posting a significant amount of stuff on Facebook, because I said, oh, you're wanting to take my stuff. I mean, we post for the show and whatnot, but, like, you're wanting to take our stuff and feed your system, your algorithm. Mm-hmm. You told us, right? Pokemon Go, right? They wanted you to take photos and videos of the world for them, essentially. So we're all, it sucks because we're given these wonderful things that can't connect us, but then it's like, and this is how the rich person used it to manipulate you. So it sucks because you just have to, like, look alive. Like, Tommy is a smart person who is a intelligent, well-read consumer. So we know he's not going to, like, play video games, therefore become a white supremacist. But it sucks because there are plenty of people who are totally no idea, don't know to be on the lookout, and play video games and then accidentally become a white supremacist. Yeah. It's not and everybody, playing, but it's some. Yeah.
They're playing video games because a lot of them don't have friends. They can't connect at school. They're socially awkward. So they go to a place where they have online friends. And I mean, I've known people that have had that, like, their best friend was someone they met online playing a game when they were a teenager and never met in person, still best friends.
Yeah. Tommy meet, has you meet 20 friends. Years later. Yeah.
Yeah. Tommy has friends he plays with that he's never met in person, but they chat and stuff. So again, it's like, people going to something where they're looking for acceptance and community. And then the white supremacists get, they're like, oh, you haven't been accepted?
I know
why. Interesting. Well, I know why. And if you come over to this place, we love you. We have been waiting for you to join. It's the same with any type of cult.
It really is. It's a cult. And you're right. The word, Steve Bannon said it, rootless. These rootless white males. So males that don't feel like they're plugged into something, don't feel. And I think that is where we get into, like, a further later episode discussion of, like, you know, whatever the loneliness epidemic or I do like in comments though when someone's being an asshole and they're like, this one's not lonely enough. But that there is a question of why was there? And we can as a society be like, I don't know, just fucking figure it out. Well, we have to figure it out. Like, they, we can't say it's all you individual white men to figure this out, because the manipulators have seen them as a block. Therefore, I think we do have to address it as a block. And, like, what happened that we allowed this rootless white male army to sort of happen at all, much less no, and it's moot, created a leaderless army. And then you just needed someone to go in and be like, I can be your leader. And then people went, oh, okay. Yeah. Let's follow that guy.
Yeah. So to that point of the, like, the male loneliness epidemic, or, you know, a lot of people brush it off. Like, I don't know, they're white men. They've had the world for 400 years. Let them figure it out. Okay, that is a take you could take. Or we could all figure it out together, because figuring that out is going to help all of us, not just the white men. And I get that we all have a bit of a sour taste in our mouth when we think about white men. And it's become almost like a trope now. However, there is a reason that a huge block of white young males felt disconnected and like they didn't belong anywhere. And that's really a fascinating case study. Like, and just because they're men doesn't mean it shouldn't be studied, or we should just, like, well, they deserve it type of attitude. Because those are kids. I mean, they're like kids, a lot of them, or teenagers when they get first sucked in. Some not so much, but even the ones that aren't, they weren't given the foundation to build a healthy and non-toxic lifestyle upon.
Well,
and
yeah.
That goes back to generational trauma and just generations of racism, misogyny, all of these things that have to be broken down. And who's going to break that down? The matriarchy.
It's us. Each one reach one. I think all women each need to one sponsor reach one.
Tommy,
a white
I've
man.
Reached you.
Yeah, we need to each sponsor a white man in our life for just the price of a cup of coffee. You could buy him a cup of coffee and go, hey, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. Where did it all start? Where did it all go wrong?
The Sinisterhood Each One Reach One program. No, but I mean, you do think about that, though. And I've taken that as, I mean, I took it seriously, especially when I was worked in the hedge fund financial industry and when I worked in the legal industry of like, I have got white men listening to me for however long and for whatever amount. And really in those moments, I had to, you know, you make choices where you go, am I going to make everyone feel normal? Or am I going to say, what did you mean by that joke that you made that the mm-hmm. Asian lady, you think she would work at the nail salon? What did you mean by that joke? Because I didn't understand it. And you put them on their back foot and they have to go, well, there's stereotypes. And you just go, oh, well, it wasn't a good joke. Anyway, mm-hmm. That's a real interaction I had and it was uncomfortable and like it sucks, but we have to have those. So not everybody is in the position of privilege, I think, to have those conversations. But I was like, oh, a white lady who's a high achiever, who these guys see as not an equal, but someone that they'll, you know, talk to, not
not
like,
an equal.
Look, you know, they don't see me as an equal. I'll tell you that 100%. But, you know, that not all, some of them did. But all that to say is like, I feel, and this is not prescriptive to every person listening, but to the extent your heart is called to do this as well, we really do have to talk to people about stuff like, you know, mm-hmm. the young folks in our lives.
Yeah.
Especially the youths, but it's just any
that
guy.
That really is. And it should be covered in school and stuff, you right? know, like in, I see like stuff going on at Ella's school where they're addressing like cyberbullying and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And I hope, and we're not to middle school and high school, but there should be legitimate, like, dedicated classes to this mm-hmm. type of stuff. I mean, we talk about sex ed. We learn all about that. Why Some wouldn't schools. We learn about classes about, like, hey, if you encountered this stuff online, this is how you can go about it. Or not even online. If you encounter this stuff at home, in class, in your life, like, because the people that need to hear it the most aren't hearing it at home. So it needs to be delivered through the same type of way that kids get all their education, which is through schools.
Yeah. And funny videos on the internet.
Yeah. Make up your own funny memes about how it's not funny to be all of those things.
Be a fucking asshole. No, you're right. Or at least just like internet competency. I don't remember ever having lessons on like good places to go online. And I won't say dangerous places, but explain what 4chan is and say, listen, it's an anonymous board. These are the types of things that happen on this board. Now, I'm not telling you to go to it or not. Talk to your parents at home. But this is the internet and it encompasses all these things because I think most parents that are working super hard and raising multiple kids and are running around, they don't know what the fuck a 4chan is. And they don't know what, you know, they're like, oh, he's on there talking to his friends. What friends? From where? You know, yeah. especially self-reporting with a kid.
You gotta lock it down on those parental controls.
Internet
because
is a scary place.
Somebody was like, you hand a kid a video game controller or an iPhone, it's like leaving them in the middle of a playground completely unattended and you just bounce. Like you don't mm-hmm. know what they're going to get into. It's mm-mm. there's all sorts of shit out there.
Especially now with voice activated, you know, you don't necessarily yeah. as a kid, you don't have to know, okay, I have to click web browser. Then I have to click to www.google. Then I have to type in what is sex? Like you just have to go, hey Siri.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And then never mind,
and then
Siri.
You might, but you can also put parental controls on those. We have them on all of our yes. Google Homes and whatnot because you can easily walk up and just be like, okay, G, what's a blowjob? And then you're getting that in a lot of detail.
It's nice of you that you did not say, okay, Google, because then a bunch of people around us would be like, when one person loves another person very much. You're like, hang on a minute.
I was trying to do everyone a service in case you're listening out loud somewhere, which if you are, then people have already.
They've already heard.
They already know.
Somebody will come up to you and be like, did you need to know what a blowjob was? Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash?
Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket.
Visit progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 30% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 30% off. Terms apply.
Gamergate gradually dissipated through 2015. Platforms cracked down on coordinated harassment. Key figures moved on to broader culture war targets. Overall, the movement's energy was absorbed into the alt-right political ecosystem that would coalesce around Trump's 2016 campaign. The people who spent 2 years coordinating harassment campaigns and IRC channels and 4chan threads didn't disappear after Gamergate wound down. In the intervening years, they became more radicalized as they waited for their next cause. In October 2016, WikiLeaks gave it to them. So what do we think?
Man, people need to be watched.
Yeah, like Big Brother style. There should be like eyes in the sky that watch everything we do.
I don't know. We are getting to the point where I do feel like everybody is watched all the time. So then you're like, okay, if they can see me through my Wi-Fi routers, they can, Apple can now see me from my, they can read my whispers and my lips from my front facing camera. You know, every Ring camera is actually recording, even if it's not recording. Every pet camera is probably recording if it's not recording. It does make you wonder, are we going to move to a panopticon kind of world where we're all just like, well, we all have to act right because we're all being watched, or knowing I've been seen doing the murder or whatever the thing, the bad thing that you know you're going to do. I don't know, because on the flip side, anonymity also breeds violence. So are we just violent regardless?
Yeah. I don't know. That's an interesting question. I think also to the point of Ring cameras and all that, follow the money. See who owns the companies that you're investing in, because like we discussed in many of the Epstein videos or Epstein episodes, all the same like handful of people own all the ADT and Ring and all of the other security systems that have cameras around your home and everything. And then you think, why would they all want that? Because they want eyes on you all the time. I mean, that's power. That's knowing how people behave, so then you can market specific things towards them, create new products. But it becomes like we'd become dependent on them. So people will kind of, because it's not right in front of you, like, oh yeah, well, but I like the Ring camera because I can see who's at my door. And if I'm not home, like I can make sure that we're being kept safe. Yeah, that's one part of it. There's another part too that we all say, well, I'm not going to think about that part, myself included, because I really like this perk I get from having this thing. And that's how the world runs, because the powers that be know that our own comfortability is going to outweigh having to do without, because we all have learned that it's founded on just horrible shit.
They're just like, well, that's just how it is. If you want to have a phone in your pocket, you want to be able to find your phone, don't you? And you're like, well, yeah, I want to be able to find it. And it's like, good. Well, we can help you find your phone. And you're like, so you know where my phone is? Yes. All the time. Even when it's turned off. Yes. What about when I take the battery out? You can't do that anymore because we changed all phone designs that batteries can never be removed. And you're like, oh, huh. And they're like, Aren't you so happy you can find your phone?
Smash it with a hammer. Throw it into the ocean.
Yeah, what did all those people in the Karen Reed case do? Just like throw it in a dumpster in a classified area after you shredded it or whatever. But it is like, you're right. I love Find My Phone feature. Mm-hmm. I love it. But also, I don't forget that my phone is findable. So it's just a new, it's a whole new world we're navigating as far as like what privacy looks like, given our enmeshment that we now have with technology, and that it does look different. And so, you know, privacy looks like an anonymous 4chan post, but, and, you know, going out and doing things on behalf of an anonymous 4chan post. And it also looks like, I think, the federal government and others just tapping into your feed whenever they want to, because they can. That's what Edward Snowden taught us. So
for sure. And as we'll talk about in the upcoming episodes, what happens when the worst people get onto Reddit and 4chan and start puppeteering?
About to see it. And we get to talk about Roger Stone next time. I can't wait. And his big ass Richard Nixon back tattoo, full back piece of Richard Nixon.
Oh my God. It's great. That is so embarrassing.
It's bad. This comes from a person with a huge Abraham Lincoln tattoo. Mine
That's
is
not
more
as embarrassing.
Done. It's way more tasteful.
It's also not a full back tattoo.
It is not.
Not that there's anything wrong with full back tattoos, but for someone to sit down and be like, and this is Richard Nixon that you're wanting. And for multiple days and hours, he goes back to finish that. That's really a work of art.
Shout out to the tattoo artist who was not just like, no.
They're like, no, I'll make this my best piece ever.
It's probably like it's big. I say full back, but it's like just like oddly placed directly on his spine, like under his own head. It's weird. No,
like a tramp stamp. Oh, yeah. Up by his head. By the way, recently heard tramp stamps. I don't think we should call them that anymore, but because that's the only way I know to describe them right now, are coming back.
Oh, yes.
That is weird placement.
It's just odd placement.
It's also not centered to his head unless his head is turned, which
it doesn't
that
look
would
centered.
Drive me bananas.
There's like seven more pictures of him and none of them are centered. It's weird. I think it's centered.
It's weird too that it's his head underneath his head. Like, do you wish this was your head and that's why it's so close to your neck?
He's like, speak to me. It's like fucking that's our second turf Harry Potter reference, but sometimes it's appropriate, which just starts whispering to you like the professor. But I do wonder. Well, I liked mine where it's at, because then it looks like Abe Lincoln's got a blindfold on if I'm in a bikini.
Nice. Yeah, you can't see what's going on.
That's classy. If you've ever participated in Gamergate or Brigading or 4chan, or you know people who were part of it, or WikiLeaks or any of that, or if you're Chelsea Manning and you want to come on the show, we would love to interview you.
Please. Or send it in to sinisterhood.com/FreakyFriday. Any of your brushes with any of this, we'll definitely be on the lookout for those.
If you are Roger Stone's back tattoo artist,
I'll fly you here. And we'll do a 2-hour sit down interview.
What was
that like?
Oh, goddamn.
Well, if you like our free episodes like this one, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next, or dive into over 1,000 hours of content, like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Heather Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed. And Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
And if you want to check out the live Q&A we've got going tomorrow night, but you're not sure if you want to sign up yet, check out a free trial. That is where you join at any of the tiers. So just join at the Ruling the Airwaves or Getting Into It tier. You could check out all the perks. So jump into the live Q&A, hang out with us, and then cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. But if you stick around, you get a ton of stuff, and do that annual membership so that you also get a month free as well.
Mm-hmm. And when you do join at a tier, you get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live bonus content that we stream. We let you all vote on what you want to see. You get weekly audio bonus content, mini-sodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Don't forget to head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out Sinisterhood merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. We love all the 5 stars and kind words everyone has left us. Thank you so very much. You can submit topics for cases you'd like us to cover, your odd but true tales for Freaky Friday, and whatever bizarre or hilarious video you want us to live react to during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. It's totally free. You just put in your email. You get immediate access. You also get immediate access to a whole backlog of free content just as a thank you for signing up. We are on a bit of a hiatus due to holidays and scheduling for the month of April, but we will be back May 3rd. Oh,
I don't know why I put my hand up like 5.
Yeah, that's a 5. And I was thinking, oh, we're about to have the May 4th, which everybody
be with you.
Fucking loves. So it's the day before that.
We'll have May the 4th Eve. We can't wait.
That'll yes. On our website, you'll also find topic-based playlists and all the information for Crime Wave at Sea 2027.
Come aboard. Follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us over on TikTok and YouTube at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, my Steve Bannon impression, and more. And if you're looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan,
you could do one of these as I'll a Steve it. Bannon.
You
a
would
Steve
like
Bannon, like Steve Bannon creature he is.
We call him a Steve Bannio, and it's a Steve Bannon cameo. It's where I do an impression of Steve Bannon and do a cameo. But if you are looking for a unique and personal gift, check out a cameo now. You can also just use it to treat yourself. People do that as well. We'll do a tarot pull, give you some advice, relate, commiserate on something you went through, or we would love to help celebrate anything that you would like to celebrate with us. Happy birthdays, birth announcements. It's coming up on graduation time for folks, Mother's Day, Father's Day. We will create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. It's a thoughtful gift. It's perfect for you're not trying to leave the house to get anything. And it's also a completely unique gift that they've never gotten before. Even if they've gotten a cameo, each one is new. So go to cameo.com/sinisterhood. Where can people find you online?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts. Bri Wright.
Harriet Hines.
Kelly Inskipt.
Dana Stewart.
Peace Cat.
Rachel Holmland.
Courtney.
Jessica Simon.
Cassandra,
Mary Ross,
and Valerie Anderson.
Thank you all so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you all. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. We hope we pronounced your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Sinister.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Get a full body reset anywhere you go with Dr. Teal's Magnesium Spray. It's a concentrated magnesium blend of pure Epsom and Dead Sea salts, all bundled up in a convenient on-the-go bottle. A few quick sprays will relax your body and mind and keep you feeling recharged all day long. It's wellness you can feel, and you can find it in your local bath aisle. Dr. Teal's. Yep, you needed that.